now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. He ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I'll make you ugly as soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble in the cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say you better.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Big day today. Shout out to the listener I met in the line at Target the other day, by the way. UPS driver. And listens all day long. Big fan of the show. It is really humbling to be checking out at Target and just have someone say, love the show. 9 to 11. Locked in every day. So that was fun. Interesting day today. Big day today because we have the return of Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. I texted with him yesterday when he was in a layover at Logan in Boston. And so I'm just going to presume he got home, and I'm going to presume we're going to talk to him at 10 o'clock. So,
glad he wasn't flying to Ireland from Boston.
It's good he wasn't?
Yeah, there's a former NFL player that the plane had to get diverted back because he peed on a...
What?
Yep. Peed on another passenger.
This was recent?
This was today, apparently.
This is intentional? Who's the NFL player? He stood up and urinated? Oh, that is bad form. I've heard, like, some people get upset if you take your shoes off on a plane.
Correct. This was a very different... Yeah, this was taking a different load off, if you will.
Do we have a name?
I did not...
Perpetrator?
I did not recognize the name.
Former NFL player urinated on someone.
Let's see.
Well, anyway, yes,
here
happily...
Here it is. It's, God... Goster Cherilis. Former NFL
Cherilis.
Player accused of urinating on passenger on Delta flight from Boston to Dublin.
Well, that's bad. I think we can all agree.
That's
worse than taking the middle armrest.
Yeah.
You know, considerably worse than that. So who knows what inspired it. But there you go. Oh, yes, anyway, Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. So we got a big show for that reason. It's a return to Chris Harrington. Also, we got Rocco in the producers.
We do. We have a second producer over there.
You have a, with all due respect, does this bring your new dog to work day, Jeffrey?
So Carly was scared of everything. So I couldn't, like, there was a couple of times.
Carly, my
previous dog. There were a couple of times, like, I would come in and do, like, projects or something, like, after hours, and I'd bring her with me.
But you couldn't bring her, typically.
She would just
terrified.
Go bananas and be uncomfortable. And so we're having a problem right now at the household where Rocco and my wife's cat have not come up with terms
It's still, by the way, it is always
this is more
his
so than
wife's
ever.
Cat.
More so than ever.
Anyway, so the cat can't use the litter box.
Correct.
Because Rocco will chase the cat.
Correct.
And so instead you have to bring Rocco to work.
Correct. So we are bringing Rocco
you
to work.
You didn't think about bringing the cat to work in the litter box.
No, of course not. I'm going to my parents' house to get an old kennel.
I see. Afterwards.
Correct.
And then you'll can crate him
right.
when you're not
exactly.
home to protect her ability.
Correct.
Urinating seems to be one of the
yes.
themes so far.
Big Monday.
Of the show. Unexpected.
Yes. I didn't think it was going this way either. Yeah.
That would be one of the themes. So we do have a big show. We got the return of Chris Harrington. Obviously, we have golf to talk about. We got NFL to talk about. And we have other matters to talk about, though. Before that, I have two different culinary topics that I would like to discuss. One, I am a man who is willing to reconsider his opinions. And I think we all should be. You don't just make up your mind, decide on something, and then, you know, sometimes people like to call it flip-flopping. I call it growth, right? If you are presented with new evidence on a topic and you are open-minded and willing to re-examine the evidence, then you have to change your position, don't you? I mean, isn't that what this is?
I call this the Josh Allen rule for me.
There you go. Right.
I was vehemently against Josh during the entire draft process, and then I saw him like, oh, this is way better.
Well, I have had, and I felt bad about it, honestly, at various times, but I have had the opinion that Pete and Sam's is wildly overrated. And that was because when I moved here as a young man coming to Memphis for the first time and heard about this place, I went there and I was unimpressed. So about 10 years elapsed, and then I went back, maybe 15, and then I went back, and I was really unimpressed. And in retrospect, I think I know what happened. I think it was a communication issue. But, you know, I hear the good people who own Pete and Sam's. I think they were on recently with Jason and John. And it's I believe in Memphis, and I believe in Memphis establishments and people who are rooted here and whatever else. So I decided over the weekend to take myself for a third time to Pete and Sam's. I went relatively early on a Saturday.
Extremely early.
I was hungry. I figured I'd beat the rush, right? I sat at the bar. I texted Jeffrey for advice. Although I had ordered the entree before I texted you. But then I adapted.
Well, you texted me so early. I was coming back from the golf tournament. I was in the post-golf tournament shower.
I see.
And so then, like, I'm furiously trying to text you, like, you got to get this. You got to get that.
Anyway, I ordered the veal parmesan. And the miscommunication was that last time I went, I swear to God, they must have heard me say eggplant parmesan. And there's one thing I hate more than anything in the world, it's eggplant.
Especially when you had veal parm on your mind.
I just thought it was slimy veal, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I ordered the veal parmesan. And then at Jeffrey's urging, I got the Italian spinach. And then I also got the house salad.
Yep.
And I have to say, it was an excellent experience. It was an excellent. It was what I had hoped it would be the first time I went. It was good. Classic red sauce, a pile of pasta. The veal was just a little bit of crunch and then a little bit of tenderness inside. And I have to say, I would not have gotten the Italian spinach but for you.
Yeah. It's the only side dish that you have to get.
I don't ever go out of my way to order spinach.
Correct.
Delicious.
Yes. It's the only side that, like, I would have insisted upon.
The whole thing was so good and so such a pleasant experience. I even thought about going back Sunday. Like, I'm a creature of habit, right? Because you said I should get the veal marsala.
Yeah.
And
or the chicken marsala.
Either one. And,
but if you had your heart set on veal.
Maybe next time I will. And now I want to try the pizza again.
Yes.
I suggest we all be open-hearted in this way. Anyway, I had a really excellent experience at Pete and Sam. So that's the first culinary thing I wanted to discuss. Secondly, before we get to the golf tournament, the aforementioned golf tournament, it is National Potato Day, Jeffrey. Mm. I know this because the early word over at the Daily Memphian, an email goes out. It's the early word. If you're a subscriber, gets you ready for the day and the week. And it was called to my attention that it was National Potato Day. And so I would ask you, what is the best kind of potato? And I've realized that is a very difficult question. Because even just thinking about it beforehand, here's what we came up with. There's fried. There's mashed. There's baked. There's hash browned. There's twice baked. There's au gratin. There's potato skins. There's potato salad. There's roasted potatoes. There's Leonese potatoes. There's potato chips. There's potato pancakes. There's boiled potatoes. There's other potatoes, I think, that I'm missing.
And did we say tater tots?
Oh, no. Tater tots. And they're different than fries, I guess. So tater tots?
I think they're different than fries.
They are. They are distinctly. Now, we aren't counting all the different kinds of fries.
Correct.
We're
just saying
shoestring, wedge, right. Like whatever, potato rolls. Are they potato logs or rolls or what are those things called?
Logs, I believe.
Yeah. Is that something else altogether?
To me, like, wedges and logs are kind of the same thing.
But I realize there's, If I ask you the best kind of potato, what you might be thinking about is, like, the zenith of potato for some people might be a great baked potato with sour cream and a steak, and like, and that's the best potato. Or the mashed potatoes that you have at a holiday dinner, maybe they got cheese whipped in there or something like that, right? Whatever. But if I was to ask you if you could only eat one kind of potato for the rest of your life, it would be fries.
Yeah, I think it has to be fries.
Yeah, fries also the best form of potato? Or are they just the one that if you had to eat one kind of potato for the rest of your life, that's the kind of potato you'd eat?
I just think they have the highest floor. Like, I don't know if
certainly, they're the most common, they're the highest floor, they're delicious. Like, I eat them most often, easily. How often are you whipping up a batch of mashed potatoes? Maybe once a month, twice a month. Right. How often eating fries? All the damn time. Too often. So fries, I think, has to be the highest form of potato. I defy anyone to say there's anything better. But I can understand why people would be really reluctant to give up. Are we going to say mashed potatoes are two? If fries are one, are mashed potato two on our list?
I'd listen to an argument for baked potato, but at the same time,
How about a good roasted potato?
See, I think, to me, I really care about floor here. And to me, it's like, I think mashed potatoes is what we're talking about.
I think a mashed potato has a pretty high ceiling. A really delicious mashed potato with gravy and all that stuff on it.
Like, I think
better than a baked. Baked three, the classic baked comes in three.
Yeah, I think that's what I'd go. I'd go baked three. Although, God, I can
fries
listen to,
one,
I listen to
mashed,
an argument
two,
for hash
baked
browns.
Three. Hash browns are delicious, but how often do you really have them?
It's just because they're so associated with breakfast food.
I never cook my own hash browns, and so I only get. And then there's a little oval hash browns from McDonald's, which I've stopped getting for reasons of just I have too much self respect, and so then there's although not that much, theoretically hash browns at Waffle House, but I never go.
Right.
You know what I think is really really good. And I think it's maybe a 1970s, 80s food, a potato skin. People really don't do potato skins anymore.
It's just, I mean,
what's happened to potato skin?
I got no problem with it. It's just, I think the problem is most of the places that you can order potato skins, you can also order fries, and people just now just choose to go fries.
People don't really get potato skins.
Like wings and potato skins used to be a thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, potato skins and potato skins used to be on the same trajectory as wings.
Yeah.
Sort of a heavy hors d'oeuvre bar food thing. And then wings kept accelerating, and it feels like skins kind of saw their day and leveled off and plummeted. I don't want to have stock in potato skins.
All right, what are we doing with potato soup?
Oh, we got to certainly add it to the list. You got to add potato soup to the list, but I'm not putting it. Oh, a good creamy potato soup
that's
with
pretty
with
damn good
bacon and stuff in there. Did someone suggest this to you?
No, I just thought of it. We've been going through it. I've been in my head. I'm like, what have we not said?
What's last? I don't even know what Lyonnaise is. Is Lyonnaise? So, is that what it is? What's
to
that?
Me? What's
you
last?
Suggested
is,
that on it.
With, Lyonnaise potato.
To me is potato salad.
Or I really do not like scalloped potatoes or whatever. What are we calling them?
They're scalloped au gratin? Are they the same?
Yeah.
Oh, those are different things, right?
Yes, they're very different.
I like scalloped potatoes. I'm not gonna allow us to put them last. They can be a last on your list,
okay,
but on our collective list, they can't
be last.
You will
get no argument for potato salad.
I'll tell you what I think is overrated is potato pancakes. Pancakes.
So are we talking like sliced, like the sliced potato?
It's literally, it's a pancake made of potato, a potato batter.
Okay, I don't think I've had that, so okay. I'm going to...
You just don't need it. Pancakes are good. You don't need it. You don't make them. Potatoes are good. Pancakes are
good.
I've
never had a flour pancake.
They're not improved by combining the pancake phenomenon and a potato phenomenon. Okay, our official ranking here is
fries one,
mash two, baked three, and then you can do soup or whatever you want to do. You can do three or four or wherever else. That's fine. That's the official ranking of the potatoes in the Jeff Calkins Show. All right, we had some things we had to clear up. The golf tournament turned out to be dramatically exciting against all odds.
Well, you know what they say, Jeff. The FedEx St. Jude Championship doesn't begin till the back nine.
That's what they say. They actually say that it doesn't begin till 12.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't begin till Matsuyama with his five-stroke lead. There he is on 12. A bogey. That's fine. He can have a bogey. Right? Anyone can, whatever. I mean, you're rolling. That's the advantage of having a five-stroke lead, right? And then in the water at 14. When did you start thinking interesting?
So after he hits the tee shot on 12, and they came to talk to him.
Yeah, so what happened was they came to talk to him because back on 7, he had tapped down a divot. And if it was in his line, he's not allowed to do that. He was off the green, and he was not allowed to do that. And so they came and chatted with him, right? About that.
Correct.
And they ultimately concluded it was fine.
Correct.
But they didn't want to wait, and I think this is appropriate. They did not want to wait till he's hitting his tee shot on 18 and saying, oh, by the way, you lost a stroke.
Or even wait till like or the thing was over.
Right, exactly. So you got to talk to him at some point. You got to let him know this is going on. And although he said, through an interpreter, because he speaks through an interpreter, he said that he was not rattled, certainly seemed coincidental, didn't it?
Yeah, I will say this. He may not have felt rattled. He certainly appeared to be rattled after that.
His play was rattled.
Correct.
His play was rattled after that. Bogeyed 12.
Because he also had a terrible drive on 13.
Yep.
Hits a bad drive on 13. 14.
In the water.
I don't even know what he was doing. Like, I think he just hit like a weak, wipey fade. 15.
Double.
Did not hit a good shot.
Bogey at 15, and then he didn't birdie 16.
Correct.
And so he falls. All of a sudden, this five-stroke lead, he's down by a stroke.
Correct. And then it was almost like as soon as he saw someone else's name.
Evidently, folks were vocally cheering against him.
So I think what happened.
Did you hear that? Drew certainly heard that.
So here's my interpretation. I was only there on Saturday.
He heard people Sunday saying, get in the water. And that is, with all due respect, bad form.
I think what happened is, I think this is natural. I think it could have been Hideki could have been chasing, and Hovland could have been up
by five.
It
didn't matter.
I think what happens is people just don't want to see a blowout.
Right.
They want to see something competitive.
It had nothing to do with xenophobia.
I do not think it had anything to do with Hideki being Japanese.
Right.
Hideki's a pretty popular player.
You just want to see it.
Yes.
Tighten up.
People just didn't want to see the.
Well, it did. Well, it did. And then just a tremendous putt on 17. 26-foot birdie putt on 17.
It was a pretty darn good shot because he's like kind of in the, like he didn't have a terrible lie, but he didn't have a great lie. He had to kind of work a shot in there, bounces it up, gets it on the green, and gave himself a putt from underneath the hole.
So to come back and having done what he did 12 through 16, and then, oh, by the way, birdieing 17 and 18.
Well, both the shots on 18
ridiculous.
Are insane.
Ridiculous. Unnecessary at that point.
Yeah, I don't know if he... I don't know if he was aiming.
Kelly was not on
I
18.
Think he was trying to aim to the middle of the green, but I mean, holy cow.
He was, yeah. So, birdies and takes the victory. And really, I think, is a model for... Memphians, because of course his week started out, as we know, in London. He was robbed.
Yes.
And his caddy was robbed, and his swing coach was robbed, and they were robbed of their passports, and so they were not allowed to travel. And so he had to get substitutes. And but Jeffrey, what better example of what we as Memphians should do when confronted with setbacks, disaster, and even crime, just carry on.
Dig deep.
Shrug it off, man.
Dig deep.
Shrug it
go
off.
Go get a new putter.
Go get a new putter. If someone breaks into your truck and steals whatever, do not let it throw you off.
Yeah, go look at the pro shop.
Just go out there and
support the local economy.
You know what you should do? Go out there and win $3.6 million.
Yeah.
That's what you should do.
We could all do it.
If you take your eye off the ball, you may not win the 3.6. If you let yourself get rattled by the fact that you have been robbed... then you're not going to achieve the things you can achieve.
Got to dig deep.
He's a civic hero.
Absolutely. might be the first person that got robbed on the way to Memphis.
Yeah, that's good too. Some of the headlines weren't clear on this, that he was, that had nothing.
No, I had to read the story and then I was like,
the robbery had nothing to do with Memphis. It was a London robbery.
Correct.
By the way, if you are the caddy, so he earns $3.6 million. If you're the caddy, it's normally 10%, right? Isn't it roughly some whatever?
For winning, yes, usually. Now, some guys have flat fees and whatnot.
Okay,
like
so the caddy who's back there in Japan.
Right. That's brutal.
You lose your passport. That's inconvenient. Is he out? He's out this. He's not getting the $360,000.
No, I would think the new caddy would.
That is brutal.
Yes.
That's your victim here. Holy smokes.
Now, I also don't know, I think his caddy, it sounds like there's a chance he could get to Denver and be there this week. I don't know, does his caddy get I've never understood, when they get the payouts from the FedEx Cup, the actual payout, not the tournament. I don't understand if they just get the money from on course. Do they get the additional bonuses?
I see, yeah. No, I do not know caddy economics well enough to know the answer to that. Anyway, you had Shoffley with a 63 on Sunday. Havlin with 66, 66 the last 2 days. Nick Dunlop.
That was awesome.
He's in the top 50.
It's ridiculous that he's not getting credit for his first win.
Right, and now he's still in the top 50 onward. He goes to Colorado. And then you had, and King Jemison over at the Daily Memphian wrote a really good piece on the other drama, which is
the tournament within the tournament
is to make the top 50.
Yes.
And it is.
And you had Matt McNeely.
It changes your year next year dramatically if you make the top 50.
If you make the top 50, it's really, you got to play really, really poorly to fall outside the top 50.
And Tom Kim, of course, was the most, flabbergasted today. He gets his last three holes, 6, 6, and 6, to finish 51st.
Yeah.
That was rough. Keegan Bradley sneaks in at 50. As we mentioned, Nick Dunlap at 48. Justin Rose, who started out this tournament well, is 55th. He does not make it.
Yeah, he hit it into the bunker, and then he hit it into the bunker on 18 and didn't get, to the flat, so he tried to hit, a 6-iron out of it, hits it into the lip. That was tough.
And so there you go. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, we did. We had a great time on Saturday.
Did you go to 14?
We did. Went to 14.
Did you have a chicken sandwich?
I most certainly did. I also had the Hush Puppies. And what else did I eat? Then we had the Pavilion Passes. They had the ice cream bars. I crushed a couple of those bad boys. It was a light carb day.
And of course, it is and continues to be a fantastic advertisement for Memphis and for St. Jude. From the flyover, the FedEx flyover, which is...
It's so funny to watch the whole magnificence. Well, it's also funny to watch the golf tournament stop. So we're on 18, and so you can hear it kind of whistling behind us. And then you just see all the players just turn and look over, the pavilion on the 18th fairway, and they're looking for it. They just kind of wait for it to stop.
Well, and it's different than your fighter jet flyover.
Correct.
You don't have to wait long for those suckers. They go boom.
Right.
This one is.
Well, they don't take a couple laps.
Yeah. So that's great.
Also, and then, shout out to whoever was doing the power washing. That's the whitest I've ever seen in an airplane.
It was very white.
Very crisp and clean.
And so great advertisement for FedEx. Memphis looked spectacular. And St. Jude, obviously, in addition to the money that is raised for St. Jude, the fact that so many people across the world are watching. And I'll be honest. I like seeing Memphis get some good pub, and so this is a week that always brings some good pub to Memphis, and so many people work so hard to put it on. Not just the people out there who are employed doing it, but all the volunteers who for whom it really truly is a labor of love. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back in a minute. Before then, I will tell you if you're selling your house, call Josh Heisa and his team at Keller Williams Realtor. Realty. 901-461-8147. 901-461-8147. These are tricky times in the real estate business, but it's good to know some certainties. And one certainty is you will get a cash offer on your home if you hire Josh Hysaw to sell it. He guarantees it. I've given you examples of lots of folks who have done this with Josh. He guarantees cash offer on your home. All you got to do is give him a call at 901-461-8147. You don't have to take my word for it. More than 300 five-star Google reviews. 901-461-8147, or Josh has the buyers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We got Chris Harrington straight up 10 o'clock. It's Monday. It is National Potato Day, and here we have, you know, we had the coaches rankings, the coaches poll, right? We had the AP rankings, the AP poll, right? And now we've had the Jeff Calkins Show potato rankings, where the top three pretty clearly in a tier of their own. I think fries are in a tier of their own, honestly. And then mashed and baked are two and three. You know, Memphis, if you're Memphis, what are you on this list? You're a tater tot? Like, you know, others receiving votes? Is that where you are here? Are you a tater tot? Are you a...
So Memphis football is what we're saying?
Yeah, Memphis football. I think you're better than potato salad. You're not...
Oh, yeah.
You're not potato salad.
I think you're very much in that tater tot.
I don't think you're hash browns. That's Ole Miss. This year, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you can make the argument, like, Ole Miss this year's like one of the top three.
Not one of the top three. Ole Miss is...
But I mean, if we're saying
6, 7, 8, somewhere in there.
But we're grading on the, so we don't have 136 options.
No, that's
true. We have like 20 options. So third would kind of.
I think Ole Miss is something pretty solid, pretty excellent this year. I'm not going to call them a baked potato. That to me, I'm fries are Georgia, right? And then mashed and baked are Ohio State and who's three?
Do we say potato chips? What do we do with potato chips?
That's Alabama.
Because the
perennial favorite.
The problem to me is when we take the number of options from potatoes.
I understand what you're doing. You're condensing your telescope in the air.
Right. Ohio State and Georgia collectively are probably French fries.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go. We did have NFL over the weekend. And I have some takes, Jeffrey.
Let's hear it.
One of these takes is the same as your take.
All right.
Pittsburgh Steelers are screwed, man.
They do not look good.
They are screwed.
And this is a team that like historically plays in the preseason.
I know they make the playoffs every year with Mike Tomlin. I know that. They make the playoffs every year with Mike Tomlin. They are not going to make the playoffs this year. They're just not. The division is too good. And so what they did is not having a quarterback, and I did not blame them for this. Not having a quarterback, they went out and said, let's get throw two darts.
Yep.
Right? Let's throw two darts, and maybe one of them will hit. Russell Wilson, that's the over-the-hill dart. And then Justin Fields, that's he never made it up the hill, dark.
Correct.
Right? And maybe one of them will hit. And they played the Buffalo Bills, my beloved Buffalo Bills, Saturday. By the way, I got that whole game. Is NFL Network giving itself away for free right now? Is that what's happening?
No.
Because I don't think I subscribe to NFL Network. I must.
I think you do.
I must.
I think you just didn't know it.
Okay. Anyway, so I watched that whole game, and they both looked god awful. And now Justin Fields looked better, but only because he could run. He's playing against third stringers at this point.
Right.
Third, but he can move much better.
But
he can do stuff with his feet. So like anytime you are Justin Fields, there will be a play where you gain 30 yards because you run for 30 yards.
Yes.
Right. Like so. Yes, he did that. Can you remember a single deftly thrown ball by Justin Fields?
Can you remember one by either of them?
He missed the, you know, freaking wide open dude in the end zone, just flat overthrew. Beautiful ball, by the way, if you just judged
if you just judged by spin. Correct.
If you didn't know if aim was not a part of it, it was a beautiful ball he threw.
Right.
Really
if they cut away before you
before
see him overthrow it, yes.
You missed him by 10 yards. What an arm.
Yes.
Yeah. They both were just god awful. And of the two, like, it's funny. I heard the unsportsmanlike guys were talking about the Steelers situation, and one of the arguments is you got to start with Russell Wilson, because when you inevitably give up on Russell Wilson, then you get the burst of energy that you get when Justin Fields come in, and you can't do it the other way around. If you start with Justin Fields and then you give up and go to Russell Wilson, that's untenable. That's not the way it should work. The problem with that whole argument, it's an argument based on the reality that either one are so bad, you're going to ultimately you're sort of conceding. We're ultimately going to have to switch, whether it's from Russell Wilson because he flops or from Justin Fields because he flops. We're going to have to switch to the other dude. And which way would be better and more hope-inducing? Well, it would be more hope-inducing to go from the old guy to the new guy. But in neither of those instances, are you suggesting either one of them can play quarterback in the league? And the more dispiriting thing, I think, was Russell Wilson, because we hadn't seen him as a Steeler, and he got the entire first half and did nothing. Now, mind you, the Bills didn't either, but that's because Josh Allen looked to see, they said, oh, it's misting out here, we're not going to play Josh. That was disappointing, so they played Trubisky.
Yeah,
and he was as bad or worse than the other two.
But they're not asking Trubisky.
You know if you're playing Trubisky,
Your season's done. Correct.
Right. You're not counting on Trubisky.
Mitch is there for vibes.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter that he stinks, and he did stink. Like, he was as bad. But you have two guys who are supposed to be starting for you, and they were terrible.
So I don't necessarily disagree, because I think that was Canty's point. I get what he's saying. I guess I would look at it this way. If you tell me one of those two guys that you pick could actually hold the job for the year, it's Fields.
I agree with that.
And so
I agree with that. I agree with that. But you also can't tell me he's freaking won the job. You know?
Oh, God, no.
He didn't win the job with that performance. So it was really. Now, in fairness, the line was just blowing.
Oh, they had no chance. Like,
Greg Rousseau, who is a very fine defensive end. He's a very fine defensive end. He's a good defensive end. He's a B-plus defensive end in the league. He was just running over their left.
Did he get blocked in the first, like, two drives?
I think he had 2.5 sacks and three sacks and three drives or something. Like, Russell Wilson was just getting, and it was the tackle that they picked last year in the first round who was getting blown up. So, that was just depressing if you're the Steelers. Now, maybe, like, they do it every year. They figure out a way every year. And maybe they will figure out a way again. But I'm telling you right now, take the under and bet against them making the playoffs. Okay. That's one thing that happened over the weekend. Second thing that happened over the weekend, you may have heard, Patrick Mahomes completed a pass behind his back. Nah, nah, nah. I hate that.
So I've been going back and forth. I still haven't decided if it was cool.
It was cool. No, it was cool. The only thing I hate about it was cool. I'm sick of them. I've reached...
Where's the respect for the game?
No, I don't have any problems with the respect for the game. I thought it was fun. I thought it was fun, and I think that's how talented he is.
No, I think the real, like, all jokes aside, the real problem is he's now bored with football.
Yeah,
he has to do things like this to, like, keep him entertained.
Make himself entertained
in the preseason,
and
which I guess, like, to me, this is kind of the other argument. It's like, I get we want our guys healthy for the season and whatnot. Mahomes plays almost every preseason.
Oh. Andy Reid plays his dudes like he does. Like,
Brady played almost every preseason.
If you're going to complain about whoever your favorite team is, and if you're worried that your coach is playing them, Andy Reid plays them every year. Now he's not going to play them the next game.
No, but I mean, he did play the first game.
Play the second game. Absolutely.
And I just don't want the first rep my guys have week
to be,
one.
No, I think that's right. I think there's something to be said for playing them. And to the extent I hate it only for the same reason that I always hate excellence. You know? It's the same reason I hated Tom Brady. And also, it was, just if there were no Buffalo Bills, if I wasn't rooting, I would still hate it because I don't like dynasties, right? Some people root for the dynasty. Some people root against the dynasty. I always rooted against the dynasty. I'm the underdog. I rooted for Villanova against Georgetown.
Sure.
I root for the underdog. And so I will, I don't like anyone dominating that much. Then you throw in the fact that with Brady, they ruled the AFC East and crushed the Bills. And with Mahomes, they don't let the Bills go to the Super Bowl. Like, yeah, that's another reason to hate them. And then, yeah, there they are, just these throwing passes backwards now. Plus, Xavier Worthy caught another touchdown pass.
Yeah, I blame the defense on that one. I know you wanted me to sit there and go, this is your life.
Yeah, the problem
he was so open.
He was open. He's going to get open.
But, I mean, it wasn't like it wasn't like he got open just because he's fast.
It's also the problem is that Keon Coleman hasn't been good. So,
correct. The problem, though, that I have right now with when we keep doing the Chiefs or the Patriots. Okay, well, the Patriots have this window from basically, what is it? Like, it's their last title was 05, and then it takes them 10 years to win another one. I just don't feel like that's going to happen right now with the Chiefs.
Boom, boom, boom.
And I know, when you're in the middle of it,
it always feels like they're always going to win.
Right. But
it really does feel like this is terrible, that the only thing that can stop them is an injury. Because they're better than they were last year. Last year, they should have been gettable.
Last year, to me, is the most, demoralizing one. Because I don't even think that team was that good.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they're tremendous. There was another point that they made on the show this morning, which is, it's very different than watching the Patriots. It's more like watching the Warriors, because without the Kevin Durant thing, that really polluted the Warriors. The Patriots were never fun. It was fun if you were a Patriots fan, right? But they never looked like they were having fun. They were do your job.
Until they got Randy Moss.
Right. But even then, the idea of the Patriots was grinding.
Yes.
We're not going to whatever. Do your job.
Soulless
corporate excellence, right? This is more Warrior-like.
Yeah.
It's, Mahomes is more like Steph. Oh, I can't believe he just did that. Oh, my gosh. And then they're joking about why they did it and had fun and whatever else. It is a much more likable form of excellence than...
It's certainly more aesthetically pleasing.
Okay. So that happened. Also over the weekend, we had some developments with the young dudes. And the young dudes are good. And that is, Knicks is good, at least so far. Caleb Williams is a freaking wizard. And Jaden Daniels is really good. Right now, all three fan bases, reasons to be excited.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair. I mean, to me, with Knicks, Knicks has a clear ceiling, but at the same time, he is doing exactly what Sean Payton wants him to do.
Perfect.
Get the ball out of your hand.
Get the ball out. There was a stat that I read this morning that last year, Russell Wilson released the ball in 3.01 seconds.
Correct. In a quick timing offense, that's not good.
And Bo Nix, so far, 2.78 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, that may not seem like a lot,
but it's
a lot. He is doing what he is being asked to do in that offense, and... The guy played more starts than anyone ever. And so in college, he should be ready for this. And yes, he does not have the rifle. He does not have the physical tools of the other two I mentioned. But he's doing exactly what he is supposed to do. Drew Brees didn't have the tools either. Sean Payton did okay with Drew Brees. He had actually pretty good arm.
Yeah, he's a better... He
had a pretty good arm.
By the end, when his shoulder's gone, but Drew Brees was
much more gifted. It was not a physical marvel.
No, and, 100%.
And so Bo Nix looked terrific, honestly. And Caleb Williams, you know what's so dramatic? Caleb Williams and Justin Fields... Justin Fields, in the end, mostly when he looked awesome, it was with his legs.
Yeah.
And Caleb Williams, mostly when he looks awesome, it's running around to do things with his arm.
He's had some impressive throws where, he's in the pocket, he, pump fakes, and then he goes to the other side and gets the open guy. He's done some stuff that's more playing quarterback rather than just running around.
And when he runs around, he is looking to throw.
Well, to your point, the touchdown that he ran, it was almost like he begrudgingly ran.
100%. 100%. He is, that is a franchise that has never had a 4,000-yard quarterback.
Yeah.
Literally, they have never had a, and so They have never had a franchise quarterback. And so Jason Smith is, I think, it's been a long wait, and I think he's the real deal. He's something else. But Jaden Daniels, tremendous this week, and Bo Nix, tremendous this week.
My only problem with Jaden is, man, Jaden looks small right now.
He does look small.
He looks slight. Now, I guess there'll be plenty of people like, hey, kind of looks slight at LSU. But it's like, I don't know. It's more jarring right now. I want my guy to learn to slide. You got to learn to get down. But in terms of throwing, like he said, it is also jarring when they put his senior year stats up and you're like 40 touchdowns to 4 picks.
Oh, it's
like,
crazy.
It's like unbelievable. It's like, I know we knew that in real time, but it's like when you see it on a graphic, it just goes, holy cow.
Okay, some other developments on the rookie quarterback front. Michael Penix, explain this to me. Did not play. Like, it is one thing if you, it is one, to draft Michael Penix as high as they did when you have Kirk Cousins, that was controversial, right? That was controversial. Okay?
It sounds like it.
But then you have Kirk Cousins. You have a quarterback that you literally are bringing there just to develop. You don't need him this year. There is no reason. What possible explanation is there to not play him in the preseason game?
You don't want him looking good again?
Is that it?
I mean, it's the only thing I can think of, unless he's banged up, but I don't think he's banged up.
No, he's not banged up. So that was crazy that Michael Penix does not play. And then maybe the most depressing single moment of quarterbacking that I saw over the entire weekend was that pick that Daniel Jones threw. We have to clarify between which pick, you know, but
right.
You're talking about the pick six. Yeah, the pick six was truly gruesome.
Matt Corral entered the chat.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was
one
a pretty
too.
Bad one, too. But Matt Corral was just signed like 24 hours ago.
This is franchise quarterback Daniel
correct.
Jones.
Listen.
Jeff, I
don't know if you
gruesome.
Heard the discourse last week, but the discourse last week was you. In preseason and in early season practice, you need to take chances. We need to see a few picks so that you know that you're learning and that you're learning what you can and can't get away with. No, the problem with that pick was that pick wasn't like a something you could just chalk up to, oh, it's the preseason. Jeff, I've seen that pick that he threw, you know, I've seen it like 15 times where, hey, first read wasn't there. He kind of got fooled. Now he's kind of running around and he panics at the last second and just chunks it up. That was tough. Also, I'm out on the Texans' new jerseys. They just look like the Falcons' jerseys.
They do look a little bit like the Falcons' jerseys.
They're dark. Like, it's a darker form. It's like,
no,
it looks black.
Yeah, you're right. We do have a winner of the quarterback battle in Las Vegas. Did not expect this necessarily. Gardner Minshew gets that job, partly because of his enthusiasm, Jeffrey.
Yeah, this was one of those ones that we've talked about, like, when they signed him, I figured that's why they were signing him, because they're paying him $12 million right. or whatever. And then they kind of played it out like, oh, I don't know, man. Like, what is he? Like, I think we know, like, Gardner's this era's Fitzy. Like, he's going to bounce around from team to team.
And he is, because he's also a burst of fresh
right,
air.
You're going to have a four-week like stretch where you're convinced that this guy's your guy.
And everyone likes him.
Correct.
You know, he's
it's
got
fun.
He's got personality.
Correct.
He's got the
he's
swagger.
He's willing to wing
it. He is 100% Fitzy.
And so you're gonna have fun for like 4 weeks. The only problem is you don't have fun
but
for the whole season.
But he also might win you some games, which is probably not that convenient. Like, he's going to win you games. He has ever since. He did in Jacksonville, he won games.
He's not going to. If you're just trying
you're
to
trying
lose,
to tank,
I think you're probably playing AOC.
Yeah. But they obviously are not trying to lose. And so there you go. Is there anything else that struck you from the week of football?
I thought Tua looked pretty good.
Did he?
Yeah. He had like two really crisp drives.
I think he is good.
I was trying to think what else. It was just nice to see. I know it doesn't matter, but the Lions kicking a field goal to beat the Chiefs. Like, we can dream. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was good.
That was fun.
The flag football people are mad because they think it's disrespectful because flag football is going to be the Olympics.
Yeah.
And so the flag football champions, this is disrespectful, but I've forgotten the guy's name, He said it's disrespectful to just assume that NFL players are going to waltz in there and take the flag football, Olympic flag football gigs, right?
Yeah, I would say it's delusional to think if
they would not.
Correct.
To think they would not.
Is there
any circumstance in the world in which you can persuade yourself that flag football is enough of a different skill set that you could be great at flag football and not be in the NFL? In other words, you could be one of the best flag football players in the world, but not be in the NFL?
Okay, maybe if you want to make the argument that way, like, I could hear it. But the thing is, there's no... If we took the best NFL guys, even with as fewer reps that they would have, they would still be better because they do 7-on-7 every single day.
And they're just, I mean, with all due respect...
Every single guy playing flag football wants to be in the NFL.
The throwing and catching part, the NFL...
Yes.
Does at a pretty high level.
Well, and we do 7-on-7.
Have you seen Justin Jefferson before? You know, have you, like, these dudes are awesome. Have you seen Patrick Mahomes? I bet he'd be pretty good at flag football, right? Like, I don't consider it disrespectful. Any more than saying 3-on-3 basketball wouldn't be better if you had three NBA players.
To me, it's like, just don't wind up in the same situation we wound up with 3-on-3, where you don't have...
No, that would be stupid.
You're not putting a competitive team on the floor.
Would you have three flag football players who are not our best football players?
Right.
No, absolutely. It's also, by the way, week zero.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
we have college football that counts.
We have college football that counts this weekend, and there are people who will tell you that this Florida State-Georgia Tech game in Ireland could be...
Close?
Close. Could be competitive. Could be...
So the line is dropped.
Competitive. Yeah.
The line is dropped, because I believe when it opened at the summer, it was over 2 touchdowns. I think it was like 15.5 or 16. It's now down to 11.5. I've heard whispers of suspensions, but I don't know that to be true. It could just be people are betting on Georgia Tech.
No, I think people think Georgia Tech made progress last year, and, you know, you got a new quarterback at Florida State, and let's see how, like, maybe they're not going to be the overwhelming.
I came into this thinking, like, I want some points. And now I'm left thinking, like, if you're just only going to make me take, like, 11.5.
You're just going to go ahead and do it.
Because I think Florida State's most of their offensive line's back.
You know what we have for only, we're only 1 week, 10 days from Jeffrey's bets.
Oh, I know.
God, that'll be good.
It's a revenge tour again.
It's all
going to
be back. We're going to have a fight song Monday.
Yeah.
We're going to have Jeffrey's bets. We're going to have college football, ladies and gentlemen. And it is long awaited.
We had some surprising quarterback announcements. Boise picks Madsen.
Yeah, I saw that. Yep, I saw that.
Nevada did not pick Purdy's brother, but I think Purdy's brother's banged up.
Purdy, by the way, has not looked great this preseason.
Be a real shame.
You've never been a believer.
I'm not as big of a hater's draft as Draft Twitter is on Purdy. Like, I recognize his superpower is processing, and he throws the ball where he's supposed
to. It's funny, though. Right now, everyone is saying it's because of Brandon Ayuk. Oh, he didn't look good without Brandon Ayuk. Is it really? You also don't really believe in Brandon Ayuk to the extent
But I do believe in the collective.
Right. Yeah, I see. And you need the collective for them each to look spectacular.
Exactly.
They are each improved by being part of a collective.
They really are stronger together.
The sum truly is greater than the sum of the whatever is that?
Some of the parts.
The parts. Yeah, the parts aren't as good as the collective.
Montana State, New Mexico. Oh, God.
Fun to be thinking about all of that. Oh, and by the way, over at O'Call, I was talking to Paul about this. They have polo shirts, the same lightweight performance shirts you've been wearing all summer. You know, comfortable, good looking, all that. But they have them at O'Call. They have them now in NCAA approved collegiate colors, the exact colors. So they got them in Tiger Blue. They got them in Tennessee Orange. They've got them in Alabama colors. They got them in Arkansas colors. They got them in Ole Miss colors. Now they don't have the, you know, a big logo, because, like, let's say you're wearing this Tuesday at work. You want to look classy, right? You don't necessarily want to wear logo wear to work. But it's the same collegiate colors, so you can wear them to the tailgate. You can wear them Tuesday to work. NCAA-approved collegiate colors at Oak Hall. plus all the normal stuff that they have at Oak Hall. Beautiful clothing, incredibly helpful people. It is football season. Time to get ready wherever you are going to a tailgate. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back. We'll talk to Chris Harrington about, Scotland. We'll talk to him about Scotland, and we'll talk to him about the Grizzly schedule. We'll do that. We'll do both of those things. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on a Monday, 92.9 FM ESPN. Hi, on the Jeff Calkins Show. It's the Chris Harrington.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. Rediscover downtown dining. Chris Harrington on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
Back in the USA by Chuck Berry. I touched ground on an international runway back in the USA last night.
You touched ground on an international runway last... You were in Logan.
That's a Chuck Berry phrase.
I'm sorry about that. How was Scotland?
Scotland was great. It was long. I think that's probably... We've taken some pretty long, like, family vacations the last few years. Like, we did a big national parks road trip that was, like, close to 2 weeks, maybe. But this was a little bit more than 2 weeks because we did 3 days in London where my wife had some business to conduct before we joined what was a big group, 2 week group trip in Scotland. And so this was a pretty long trip, and it was a lot of moving around. The 3 days in London was the longest we spent in any one place.
Really?
So it was all 2 night and 1 night stays at various places, and then get on the bus and go to a next stop. And so it was a very busy trip.
So this was not a trip that you like picked. You didn't sit down and say, where would we most like to go in the world and pick Scotland? It's because your wife works at a university that has a Scottish heritage, and that's, I suppose, why you were back in the old country.
Yeah, a college, McAllister College, which was founded by a Scottish immigrant, and this year is the sesquicentennial of the college. So, as part of the sesquicentennial celebration, they did a big 2 week trip with board of trustees, board of alumni, major donor types. And the president of the college and my wife, who's the VP for advancement, and then a faculty member who did some lectures along the way, were the staffers on the trip, and I got to sort of tag along as a sidekick, basically.
Okay. So would you recommend Scotland? And if you were to go to Scotland, what are the highlights?
So, yeah. No, Scotland was great. I would love to go back to Scotland. I feel like I have a lot more exploration I'd like to do in Edinburgh in particular. Because this is sort of an organized trip. It's not necessarily what I would have done.
You're not going to record shops, I take it.
I did make a point. My wife allowed me to skip out on an official thing. I should have done more. It's not like she would have, But I skipped out on one group outing in Edinburgh and one in Glasgow so I could just go wander. Because I like to wander.
Yeah.
When I travel, especially to cities, I'm not as big on, I got to see the castle, I got to see this. I like to go find neighborhoods where there aren't just tourists everywhere and just pretend I lived there a little while.
Yeah.
And so I was able to do that a little bit in both Glasgow and Edinburgh. I'd like to do it a whole lot more in Edinburgh in particular. We visited lots of historical sites, lots of, castles and battlefields and that kind of stuff. Again, we had a faculty member with us, and we were doing lectures on sort of Victorian England. She's a Victorian literature specialist, and she was doing some stuff with us on that. I was really struck, the castle's historical stuff was for the most part great, some better than others to me, but I was really struck by more the nature kind of stuff, the topography. We spent a lot of time in the Highlands, so it's just gorgeous, and it's gorgeous. You just get sort of bored of how gorgeous it is after a while, driving on the bus around all these locks and hills and all of this.
Right.
There's sheep everywhere, oceans of sheep. I will, for the rest of my life, I will be quoting our tour guide, Laura, who announced on our little microphone as we're coaching around the Highlands that sheep are daft. And so don't get any ideas about the intelligence of sheep. Sheep are daft. We were on a group search to find Highland cows, a.k.a. Highland coos, which are these, furry-looking cows you won't find in the U.S. for the most part, and we did find those. Scotland is rampant with good dogs. I had to hold my wife back from affectionately assaulting all the good dogs she saw in Scotland. Uh-huh. We visited this town called Inverness. We did a cruise on the Loch Ness monster thing.
Uh-huh.
But the river Ness flows into the Loch Ness, and the river Ness I enjoyed more than the Loch. And there's this river that is this relatively wide but shallow and extremely clean river, the River Ness, that flows through this town in Inverness.
Uh-huh.
And that was like really beautiful. I really liked that.
The dogs, are they all sheepdogs or all kind of dogs?
All kind of dogs. And the Scottish people love their dogs. My wife and I do too. Like there was one dog that we were just hanging out with like multiple times in the hotel bar in Inverary, this town we were in. By the way, Inverary, we went to Memphis, man, you cannot escape Memphis. Memphis stuff is everywhere, particularly music.
Uh-huh.
And there's all kinds of, like, because I'm attuned to it, there's all kinds of just Memphis stuff I noticed along the way. But in Inverary, we were having dinner at this pub. This is a really small town. Having dinner at this pub, and there was this little amateur blues band that set up shop, like, later in the night. And, like, it's a thing, man. The people pack out because there's nothing else to do. So the bar get really crowded really fast with this little blues band playing. And as they were warming up, the organ player starts warming up by playing Green Onions by Booker T and the MGs. So that was great. I heard like Al Green, like deep cuts, like, you know, in hotel bars. Heard Wendy Renee, list like it's your Stax artist playing in a, like a, they're playing her music in an Indian restaurant in Glasgow.
Did you see a John Morant jersey?
I know, but we did see a Vancouver Grizzlies cap. The guy walked by us on the street in Glasgow was wearing a Vancouver Grizzlies cap, so we did see that.
So how do they feel about England and Scotland?
I mean, there's some deep history there that I'm confused by, because royalty confuses me.
Right.
Like, I can't keep up with all the kings and queens and dukes and ladies and lords and all of that.
I know there was a lot of that stuff going on out there, but I haven't kept it straight. Yeah.
My mind really fogs over. Like, and the Scotland-England stuff gets more confusing because they call them different things. So, like, James VI in Scotland is the same thing as James I in England.
Oh, God.
And so, I just cannot keep up. And my very American, like, why do you people still care about this stuff really kicks in. And I'm like, I have a very off with their heads mentality about it all anyway. And so there's different Scottish and English, and like the thicker brogue is really noticeable in Scotland relative to, like, you know, accents in England. But we were so attuned to like what was going on in the 14, 15, 16, 1700s. I don't have a real feel for like England versus Scotland today, right?
Did you get a lot of Robert Burns there? Is Robert Burns?
The one thing I skipped out on in Glasgow, and I sort of wish I'd skipped out on something different, was we did a lecture. We had our own, you know, our own faculty member, Andrea, who we became friends with, was with us, and she did stuff. But when we got to Glasgow, there was a separate lecture from a Robert Burns specialist at the University of Glasgow that everyone attended. And that's the thing I skipped out on to go exploring, because that's really the only opportunity I had to, like, just go walk around Glasgow. So I missed out on but we did do a Robert Burns lecture.
Okay. I'll wrap up this in a minute. Food? What's the best thing you ate?
So I like haggis. I'm 3 for 3 on haggis.
What is haggis again? Tell people, everyone. Go ahead.
So my reaction to it, and then I said to Googled, and of course I am not the only person to have this. It was an idea original to me, but other people have had the same original observation. Haggis is like Scottish boudin, if you've had boudin, which is a Louisiana Cajun sausage that's you buy in Louisiana, that's like a rice and meat sausage that is sort of got a crumbly texture to it. Haggis is basically that, but it's oats instead of rice. And it's less spice because their food is not as spicy. But it's a sausage, so it's made with, you know, I don't know, offal, like whatever parts of a pig or a lamb or whatever is left over after you get the good stuff. It's a sausage that's made with that and oats, and then, you know, that's what it is. So I don't think I had bad haggis. I'm sure there's lots of bad haggis in the world. We were eating because this was like an organized trip for like people on the board of trustees.
Uh-huh.
Like we were eating at fancier places than my wife and I would have eaten on our own. And so, like, I think we were having high-end haggis treatments. We were not having, like, you know, haggis from your little corner store or whatever. So I don't know how I would feel about bad haggis, but I like all the haggis I had. I was 3 for 3 on haggis.
You had it three times.
Lots of fish. Yeah, we were there for 2 weeks. Lots of fish. Lots of fish, lots of potatoes, lots of smoked fish. Lots of smoked fish with potatoes in various forms, whether it's in croquettes or soups or whatever. There was some complaining after a while about all of the like fish and potato meals we were having. But, you know, I think part of being in a place is eating the food of a place.
So,
and so I liked it, but we were glad to get pizza last night, and I'll be looking for a burger this week, that's for sure.
So, according to Wikipedia, haggis is a savory pudding containing sheep's pluck, parenthesis, heart, liver, and lungs, minced with chopped onion, oatmeal, suet, that's fat, spices, and salt, right, mixed with stock, and cooked while traditionally encased in the animal's stomach. Now that's kind of just like a sausage, though, right?
That's what it is. It's not. I mean, pudding would be like maybe British. What British think of, not it's what pudding, we think right, of. Yeah. In our terms, it's a crumbly sausage. It's very similar texture wise to Bedad, the rice based, you know, sausage in Louisiana.
All right, last thing. Had you been to London before? Had you not been to London before?
I had not. I'd never been to London before. And so we did, this is not an embellishment of it. We did more than 60,000 steps across our 2.5 days in London. So we just hit the streets, man, and we were just all over the place. Yes.
And I take it there you'd be very happy to go back. You can spend a long time in London.
I would, but if you gave me the choice of like teleporting me to London or Edinburgh, I'd go back to Edinburgh right now. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. There's Scotland with Rick Steves, otherwise known as Chris Harrington today. So glad to have you back. While you were gone, the Grizzlies schedule did drop. Have you had a chance to scrutinize it?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of that. So I mapped out, my own personal tentative travel plans for the next year, which I have not shared with my wife or with anyone in the Daily Memphis. Let's call that very tentative at this point. And then now I'm in the process. I'm like halfway through. After I get done with you, I'm going to go sit down at a different coffee shop and try to finish. But I'm writing my annual like consumer's guide to the schedule. And so I'm sort of exploring the schedule by writing about it, which is what I tend to do. So I'm working my way through it right now, like on a game by game basis.
So one thing that last year when this schedule dropped, we sort of thought about when, this isn't the first thing you think about, you thought about when Marc Gasol's number was going to be retired, right? And we thought, Minnesota comes to town. Is it obvious to you when Tony Allen's number is going to be retired?
It is not obvious to me, but my sense is that it was going to be later in the season. And again, I have no background intel from what I'm about to say. This is just total guessing. I mean, the idea is going to be later in the season. I do have some sense of that. But I have no sense of a specific game. I would note that, like, you know, Mike Conley is still someone they'd probably like to have in the building if possible. And Minnesota does come to town, both for national TV games in the back half of the season. So I don't know whether they'd want to do the Tony Allen thing on a national TV game. I have no idea whether that's a feature or a bug, the national TV part of it. But, you know, Minnesota in town once in January, and then they come back again in April. It wouldn't surprise me if they tried to make it one of those.
Well, the January is MLK, so they wouldn't do
also,
it
also, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. So they're not doing that. But so late April. The other one I would look at maybe is like Oklahoma City's in town, like March 5th.
That makes sense.
Tony Allen has Oklahoma connections, so that's something. So, They're Oklahoma City's in town on February 8th and March 5th. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was one of those games. So I would, you know, if I was guessing, I'd guess one of those two Oklahoma City games or the Minnesota game later in the season. But I don't really know.
Both of them, there is not a Minnesota game later in the season that is not national TV, because I would think that would be, they would not want it on national TV.
Yeah, you may be right. So maybe I'm guessing. Again, I'm working my way through it in quasi real time. So I'm going to guess maybe one of those OKC games.
All right. What struck me about the schedule, and maybe this is silly, like, I don't know whether it is "quote unquote" important for them to get off to a good start. It's important to me that they get off to a good start, because I'd like to see them reassert themselves as an elite team in the West, and because I don't want to be hearing about Taylor Jenkins on the hot seat, whatever else. I would like to get them to get off to a hot start, and it does feel like if you go further through the first 20. It feels like that is very much in reach. It's a pretty soft schedule. You got two games against Philadelphia. You got two games against Denver. One against Milwaukee in the first 20. But all the others are like those are the only elite teams in the top 20. Really, it strikes me. You got some Lakers and Warriors and stuff.
And I feel like it's fairly home heavy early. I know when I mapped out my travel plans, I had myself in Memphis a lot more in October through early December than I had through December and early January. I feel like, and I have not, this is just memory, I feel like, and obviously last year was just terrible, I feel like in most of the good years under Taylor Jenkins, they tended to sometimes start a little slow and then hit their stride. Like, I know they I think it's January maybe, they tended to have great months, something like that. I do think this year more than others, the good start thing is probably a little more important because you want to feel like last year is really in the rear view and last year was a gap year and that you're back. You want that confidence built early that, like, you know, we're back. We are what we were before last season. We're not what we were last season. And I do think some of the stuff, you know, that, you know, I don't think there's any real, like, Taylor Jenkins job stuff. I think
no,
that's just.
No, I just didn't want to hear about
it. But you're right. It would become a topic regardless of the internal reality of it if they get off to a slow start. So, yeah.
Just in terms of how you're, as people know now, you live in the Twin Cities, and then but the way you're going to do this is, A, you can follow a lot off TV, but then you're going to be back here, right. And are you also going to do more, like you're flying either way, so you're going to do more road trips? Because typically you went to New Orleans
I'm mostly going to be driving because I like to drive.
I see, right.
And then when I come to town, I plan to be in town for a minimum of a week, but sometimes like, you know, maybe 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks or whatever, and I, you know, I want to have my car with me. So I'll mostly be driving. I have not discussed, so I probably shouldn't like do it on the radio, but I haven't done it like with
yeah,
the editor.
They're all listening, Eric, you know, right. Whatever. Yeah, right. Mary, they're all listening, yeah.
And so, like, there's only one of the bummers for me personally, the schedule. They're going to play at Minnesota once, not twice.
Oh.
The way the schedule lines up, I'll probably do that game in Minnesota. I'd like to do the game at Milwaukee, but I think that's not going to work out because it's sandwiched in between two pretty good home games. So I'll probably just be in Memphis, you know, so at Chicago.
How far is Milwaukee? How far is Milwaukee and Chicago?
Like, I don't know, like 5 hours. And I actually just spent the last 2 weeks in Scotland, the Scotland trip with a guy, a fellow Mac grad who lives in Milwaukee and is a season ticket holder for the Bucks and the Packers and really wants me to come hang out and go to games with him. And also, this is our Memphis sports connection, happens to have been a high school debate teammate with Pete Pranica.
Oh, well. Did Pete have his colored cards probably even then? You know, he had his color-coded cards, right? That's great.
I did do a little Pete Pranica in high school reconnaissance, but I'll leave that for off air. And at Chicago is a game, like, you know, whether that's preseason or regular season, which is close. Also, my daughter's in school there. And so I don't know. I've been looking around, but I haven't talked about that with people at the paper. I plan to be in Memphis a lot. I plan to be in Memphis for the majority of the home games. You know, certainly not all of them, but more than half of the home games I plan to be in the building at FedEx Forum for.
I see. They open on the road, and then they come back and open. Orlando's a perfectly fine opener. The problem with that day, honestly, is it's a college football Saturday, so it's not perfect from that perspective, just, you know, whatever. Small secret is that you would think that the opener always sells out, and that's the one day when they know they need to sell out, because you need a sellout on the opener, but it doesn't, in fact, always sell out easily. And so, and then they're going to be going up against college football. That was my only objection to the home opener. I don't have any particular conviction of whether they open at home or on the road or anything else.
I think the home opener sort of goes along to some degree with the wanting to get off to a good start. I think the home opener this season is even a little bit more intriguing. It has nothing to do with the opponent, but it's even a little more intriguing than most seasons because, you know, John Rand is not starting with a 25-game suspension this season,
right?
And he has not played since January. And so to see Ja play his first game since January and to see Zach Edey's first game in Memphis, you know, I think this is a more intriguing rookie debut than we've had for a few years. And so I think there'll be more interest around the opener and seeing the team for the first time. There's always a lot of interest around the opener, but I think even a little more this season than maybe last season.
Well, and God willing, we may be able to finally see these players play together. You know, Marcus Smart and Ja and like all of them. Who knows what's going to happen in training camp? Oh, by the way, did you have any particular? Are you going to go to Nashville for the 3 days of training camp that they're doing there? Have any thoughts about that?
Again, I have not discussed that with our editors or with Drew. But my assumption is that yes, that Drew and I would both be in Nashville for that.
Do you have any thoughts about it being in Nashville?
I would rather it not be in Nashville. Nashville. I mean, it's not even like an anti-Nashville thing.
Right.
It's that Nashville holds no great intrigue for me. I've spent lots of time in Nashville. So right. I would rather be in Memphis than be in Nashville.
Or in Edinburgh. If they wanted to hold it in Edinburgh, that'd be okay, too.
We should do that. And if the Daily Memphian will pay for the plane ticket and the hotel, I think, because the Grizzlies got enough money to do it, we should totally do training camp at Edinburgh. Yeah.
I will. I'll wait and see your breakdown of the schedule, which five-star games you have, which one-star games you have. It is interesting, though, because I suspect that the games that are going to be the easiest to sell out are the Lakers and the Warriors, right? That's still true, even though Minnesota and Oklahoma City are now the rivals, yep. Right?
Well, this is a macro question for the NBA. The true stars are LeBron. We just saw this in the Olympics,
right?
The true stars are LeBron James and Steph Curry, and to a somewhat lesser degree, I think Kevin Durant. Those are the real stars. The best players in the league are Nikola Jokic and Giannis Antetokounmpo, and when he's healthy, Joel Embiid and Luka Doncic. I think those are the best players in basketball right now. But the biggest stars in the league are the dudes that have been around for 20 years. And that's part of the reason why the NBA, they tried it, I think it was last year, they tried it, and it didn't work out, and they're trying it again. They've got national TV games between the Grizzlies and the Timberwolves in the back half of the season. They tried that last year. Ja Morant, Anthony Edwards, these are the guys who have next. These are the guys who are best positioned to be the next American stars. Victor Wembanyama is going to be the best player probably in the next group. But the top American stars, the players best positioned to be the top American stars in basketball are Anthony Edwards and Ja Morant, and they're going to go head-to-head. The NBA hopes, cross your fingers, they're going to go head-to-head on national television late in the season multiple times, which they hoped to do last year, and it didn't happen because Ja Morant was not playing basketball.
I don't know whether you were able to catch in the Olympics, but one of the striking things there, of course, was it wasn't just they were the biggest stars in terms of profile, everything else. They were also the best players. It was kind of remarkable. Like, they were the best players in that tournament, Steph and LeBron.
It's not only just that the younger Americans coming up under them haven't reached the same level of acclaim. They're also not as good. As good as Ja Morant and Andy Edwards are, and Jason Tatum is, and just won a title. Right. They're not that. LeBron James might be the best basketball player who's ever walked the planet. Steph Curry is the best shooter who's ever set foot on the planet. Kevin Durant is the most skilled scorer at that size who's ever existed on this planet.
Right.
Those are special, special players.
Right.
And as special as Anthony Edwards and Ja Morant and some of these other guys are, they are not that special.
Well, then they were not even as special as the 40-year-old version of LeBron. Jason Tatum couldn't get off the bench. You know, it was.
No, I think I said this 2 weeks ago. We were talking. Maybe it was ahead of the Olympics, and I said, you know, if you're playing one game tonight, you tell me I get the best possible version, I'm taking LeBron James and Kevin Durant over Jason Tatum. Like over 82 games, I'm taking Jason Tatum probably. But no, those guys are still great on any given night at a level that these other guys aren't.
All right, go have a burger. Thanks, Chris. Nice to have you back.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Have you ever had haggis?
I've not had haggis, no.
I have not had haggis either. But by the way, it is National Potato Day. And earlier in the show, we established that the official potato ranking of the Jeff Calkins Show is fries 1, mash 2, baked 3. And then we discussed all the other forms of potato, and I'm talking about the hash browns, the twice baked, the au gratin, the Leonese, the potato skins, the potato salad, the roasted potato, the scallop potato, the boiled potato, the tater tots, the potato pancakes, the potato soup, the potato chips. And I said the potato pancakes unnecessary. And now I've been invited to have potato latkes, which are potato pancakes, and by one of our Jewish listeners. Potato latke is a Jewish tradition, and I think I should take him up on it. Listen, I'm like I said before, I went back to Pete and Sam's. I had a great experience. You got to be open-minded about things, you know?
Right. And we always want to try the best version.
I want to try the best version of things. Yeah, I don't want to be disparaging slamming potato pancakes without having had the best version. And so there you go. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back in a moment. Before then, I will tell you, if you've got a big yard, got a piece of land you're taking care of, if you got a big old garden, or if you're a bush hogging or whatever it is, get yourself a tractor. Go to Mid-South Ag Equipment and get yourself a tractor. They've got Case IH tractors with 140 horsepower or less, and it's exactly what you need. I'm not talking about, you know, acres of soy in Arkansas. I'm talking about a nice tractor that is a tractor. It's manageable, though. It's a Case IH tractor. I saw them at the Erie County Fair. I was up in Buffalo recently. Saw them there. Beautiful tractors. Forget green. Go big red with a smaller Case IH tractor. At Mid-South Ag Equipment, they are in stock right now, and they are offering 0% financing right now. That's Mid-South Ag Equipment, Highway 302 in Byhalia. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. If you are getting engaged, go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. Simple. Three locations, South Haven, Bartlett, and brand new diamond showroom on Perkins Extended. That's the one that I go to. But here's the reason to go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. Hey, I love Howie. I love the folks over there. They've been here now for decades. They're invested in Memphis. I just believe in that. You know, I believe in that. But that in the end, that's not why you're going. You're going because they make buying an engagement ring an incredibly easy, even fun. It's a stressful thing. Most of you who are buying an engagement ring have never done it before. And they walk you through it. They don't tell you you need to, you know, sell a kidney in order to do it. You can bring in a picture or an idea or whatever. They will walk you through the process. And then all kinds of stuff. Like, they got free ring sizing for life. They've got Ask Now, Pay Later, where you can get 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Jeffrey can tell you. They're tremendous at what they do. Oh, and by the way, with a peace of mind meant to be guaranteed, you can buy your loose diamond custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, and you have 365 days to return it. So, for example, if you did what I did when I first got engaged, the first time around, I got a great deal on a diamond, and until I took it in to be appraised, and the guy said, yeah, this is not what it's worth. What do you think it's worth? Because it's got this giant-ass scratch on it. Well, there is a peace of mind that knowing that I didn't get it from Robert Irwin Jewelers. I got it from a guy who offered me a great deal with a peace of mind guarantee, 365 days. It's Robert Irwin Jewelers, rijewelers.com. All right, Jeffrey, a couple of stories we have to get into, one involving Tua and one involving Michael Orr. So Michael Orr was back in the news because there's a big piece in the New York Times about Blindside and all of that. And you asked me, Jeffrey, is there anything new in the piece?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
No.
So,
there. No.
Okay.
No. What is new in the piece? No, he talked to Michael Orr, and Michael Orr has not talked, like really almost nobody has, since this thing began. They've talked through legal proceedings, and that lawsuit, by the way, is still ongoing. As is, by the way, the John Morant. He is due in court, or that case is back in court. The John Morant case is back in court Friday. So,
hooray.
So in terms of legal proceedings, so Michael Orr talked, and here's the truth. This is the part that I am totally sympathetic towards Michael Orr about, and that I 100% get his point. And the point is this, that in the movie and the book, but no one really read the book. It's just the movie, right?
Yeah.
He was made
to look like he sucked at football, and Sandra Bullock is the only reason he's any good at football.
And he was dumb. He said, it's hard to describe my reaction. It seemed kind of funny to me, to tell you the truth, like it was a comedy about somebody else. It didn't register. But social media was just starting to grow, and I started seeing stuff that I'm dumb. I'm stupid. Every article about me mentioned the blind side, like it was part of my name, etc. And I get why that would bother you if that is the way you are perceived. And so, weirdly enough, I think his biggest gripe is with Michael Lewis, you know, and the way that he was portrayed in the book, but then and in the movie, you know,
yeah,
and,
or I'd say like John Lee Hancock, who directed the movie,
or whatever, you know what I mean? So, and I listen, I get that. That would be. It is, in the end, it's his story to tell, and he didn't tell it. You know, he wasn't given agency over his own story. And it's the way it's just the way it worked. It didn't, you know. When the Tuohys did this, they did not think there would be a book. They did not think there would be a movie. Like, whatever you think of them, they did not do this. They sold their Taco Bells for more than $100 million. They did not do this for the money.
No,
period.
I'm not certain about the previous statement you made. Sean has known Michael Lewis his whole life.
Yes, but
Michael Lewis has had many books turn into movies.
Yeah, no, he has moved and made his.
I'm not saying that was the number one goal.
Yeah, I don't think they took him in because they. 1,000%
agree with you.
That's
on
what
that.
I'm saying. The book was not the reason for doing this.
Totally agree.
So you know, whatever, and I get that. I'm a little, like, in terms of the lawsuit itself, if you're trying to get money, when this came out, people tried to conflate it with the Britney Spears conservatorship, right?
Like, yes.
Because this was a conservatorship and not an adoption. They're like, oh, the Tuohys must be running his whole life and bilking him for every penny. And by all accounts, from what I'm... Michael Orr got every penny of his NFL contracts. He got every penny of his endorsements. He got, like, there is not a cent of what the Tuohys did get is, at least according to the story, Leanne would give speeches for as much as 50 grand.
Yeah, right? I think they got a platform.
So they got a platform, and they got the platform, and very clearly, I think Leanne enjoyed the platform. But that wasn't ever the intent of this, and it wasn't ever to bilk Michael Orr out of his money. It just wasn't. I don't believe it for a minute. In fact, what I would ask is, I do think that Michael Orr did not, in the end, he didn't like the way he was portrayed in the book or the movie, in the end. And I totally understand. He's not some big moron. Like, it's like if that's how he was perceived, and that's, mind you, I haven't read the book or seen the movie. So, but I believe him. If that's how he believes he was perceived, I 100% can see why that would be objectionable to him. I don't know that it's, we'll see what I don't know in the legal realm. I don't know that you can be compensated for that. I don't know I don't know that's much of a cause of action.
I think for a while he also thought that they got that everyone else was getting rich off this book and movie,
yeah,
and
this
he
just
wasn't
true.
And
that's not true either.
Because if you notice, that message is toned down.
It's not. And I mean, the truth of the matter is, if you read his own book, which was published in 2011, right? In his own book, let me just see if I have that here. Where is it now? You know, he basically, does he dedicate it to them? Like, he very clearly thanks them.
I know this.
In his own book, he is, let's see where I have this. Go ahead, what were you going to say?
I know that when...
Here it is. Hold on. In his own book published in 2011 titled I Beat the Odds From Homelessness to the Blind Side and Beyond, Orr includes this dedication. The dedication to the book. To the Tuohy family. You are truly a blessing to me. Thank you for helping me to turn my dreams into reality. And in the book he writes, the more time I spent with that family, the more time I felt like I had found a home. Now, I know that a lot of you out there are just lined up and think the Tuohys are the worst people in the world, and that's fine. You're not going to want to hear that. But there it is, dedicated... dedicated to the Tuohys, and I just don't believe and will never believe that the Tuohys did this to get rich off of Michael Orr. It doesn't mean that Michael Orr shouldn't have had more agency over his story and shouldn't and can't be angry over the way he was portrayed in the story. I just don't know that that's much of a legal cause of action.
Yeah. The line that I was always told, I don't know, was this 2 years ago or 1 year? When did this heat back up? Was this last summer or last spring or whatever?
A year ago.
The line that I was told from people that I would say we're not really partial either way was Michael was happy to go along with this until he wasn't.
Right. Well, here's the other thing. Reading this story, you're like, to the extent there was an injustice here, I can see there was some injustice here. If he doesn't get to tell his own story, right? That's the injustice. Think of all the injustices in the world that the New York Times could invest a giant piece. It's a long piece writing about.
Sure.
Right? I would argue that this piece trades on the same celebrity that, like, what? To write this is trading on the same celebrity and the celebrity of The Blind Side that you're objecting. Like,
correct.
If he was exploited then, like, if this is all still exploiting
you're,
it, you know what I mean?
It's still like,
we're just going to ride off The Blind Side name and get a 2,000-word, 3,000-word magazine piece that, let's be honest, there's a lot of injustices in the world. You do have to acknowledge that the Tuohy's might have had something to do with him making $32 million or whatever it is in an NFL player. Like, they helped him get eligible, they whatever else. I'm not sure he would have made it. He wouldn't have made it without the Tuohy's. I don't know. But they clearly helped him along the path to making
$30 million.
And so to the extent there is an injustice, whatever. It's not much of an injustice. It's not, in the grand scheme, a particularly large injustice compared to all the injustices we could be writing about and devoting time in the New York Times about.
Yes.
Unless it's because you want to be trading on the same blindside celebrity stuff that you know, whatever.
No, the reality is, like, having read the book and seen the movie, the person who's portrayed the worst, my boy Hugh.
Oh, is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Hugh comes off bad. You know who else comes off bad? Michael Lewis. Every time he talks...
I lost a lot of respect for him after the SBF thing.
He just doesn't... He doesn't come off well when he's interviewed on this stuff. Like, maybe this is honest to say this, but he basically says... He talks about how the book was a failure, basically, and says, football people don't read. Right? Which is kind of true, but, like, he doesn't always help himself with the interviews.
Hand up, football person, right. Not a big reader. Did read this one, though, buddy.
Anyway, okay. We have another brewing controversy.
Oh, boy.
Tua and Brian Flores, former head coach of the Dolphins. Evidently, Tua not a big fan of Brian Flores.
Yes, so Tua sat down with Dan Le Batard. It's a interview that you can see on YouTube. It's going around. But here's the money quote that everyone's focused on. Quote, to put it in the simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you suck at what you did, that you didn't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be there, that this guy should be there, that you haven't earned this right, and that you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit, like, you are accurate, you are the best, whatever, you are this, you are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it. Regardless of what it is, the good or the bad, and you hear it, the more and more you start to actually believe it. I don't care who you are. You could be the president of the United States. If you have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear or that you probably shouldn't be hearing, you're going to start believe that about yourself.
Okay. The thing is, only at the end does he call him a terrible person. This is the difference between having a boss who believes in you and a boss who doesn't, right? Yeah. But it doesn't, in fact... I haven't seen any examples of how he's a terrible person, except for at the end when he calls him a terrible person. But the only evidence that he's a terrible person was he did not think Tua was good at his job.
Well, and Tua, you know, it's also important to note, like, you know, Flores was going back and forth between playing Fitzmagic and Tua, and
Flores very clearly didn't believe in him. I mean, that's when, you know, 100%. They all wanted to get another quarterback. Like, that's when they were doing everything they possibly could. Yeah, to get Burrow, or they were trying to get. Deshaun, right? Weren't they at one point? Weren't they trying to? Yeah, they were trying to trade.
They tried to get Brady. Remember, that was the tampering thing.
They were trying to do whatever they could. So, I totally get going from a coach who does not believe in you to a coach who does believe in you. My God, like, how about Tua's life? Like, to go from that coach who's telling him he sucks, who's trying to get anyone else to do the job other than him, and instead to have a coach who says he's awesome, and by the way, then puts two extraordinarily fast receivers and says, all you got to do is lob it up there, and they're going to go get it because they're going to be wide-ass open, right? Like, that is 180 in terms of his circumstances changing.
And in fairness, Flores, I do think, was doing the Belichick thing of, you know, Belichick
coaches a certain way.
Yes.
But do you think... Does that make him a bad person, or does that just make him a coach who coaches that way?
I think it makes him a coach that coaches that way.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's in Brian Flores' heart. You know what I mean?
Right. I don't.
I do think he's coming at it from the, you know, when you hear Brady at the end whining about, like, I'm still getting coached the same way that I was when I was, you know, filling in my second year. And, you know, you can't make this throw. You can't make that. Like, I think that's what Flores was doing. I don't think Flores was like, you know what? I'm going to just rip Tua to shreds and hope that he's never any good.
By the way, congratulations to the, once again, Memphis women's soccer.
Keep just rolling.
I mean, here's the thing. They're beating Missouri over the weekend. 2-0. I mean, and this is after, like, this is not the same team as the team that went to the Sweet 16 last year. And I was talking to the coach a little bit ago, and he was saying I was a little nervous about this team. You know, until you see.
Well, whenever you have new faces, you just don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know how they're going to perform.
Right. And then they go out, and it is just amazing. Like, they're beating SEC teams routinely. It's just kind of an incredible thing. So, shout out to them, and of course, to everybody at the golf tournament for the work they did. And yet another terrific weekend for Memphis. Looked just great on TV. And, I mean, you got St. Jude, you got FedEx, you got the whole thing. It's just to have a burst of that kind of publicity is terrific, and it's much needed for the city.
Oh, I saw this great moment from the tournament on Saturday. I forgot to tell you about it.
Uh-huh.
So next to... It's kind of like in between the tee box and the pavilion, NBC uses like the very, like the raised camera that like goes up on a lift.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like right before like the big group started to come in, the camera lift goes down. And I'm like, I wonder what's happening. Camera operator went to go get a Pronto pup.
That's great. Before we get out of here, I do want to tell you, over at FanDuel, they've got a special deal for you. So here's it goes. All FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get a 3-week free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. That's right. All FanDuel customers bet $5.
That's a $540 value.
3-week free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Then, with a YouTube TV base plan, you'll be able to watch every regular season Sunday afternoon out-of-market game. All you need is a Google account and a current form of payment, and you can cancel any time. Just visit FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to download America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. Full price of NFL Sunday Ticket will be automatically charged seasonally after the free trial. No refunds, terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. We got football, ladies and gentlemen. We got preseason football is plowing along, and we got actual college football games that count this weekend. Jeffrey, we got to get out of here. What is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Today, they will be joined by you at 1:25, so you're going to join them today. My co-host for my company this week for Jeffrey Wright and Company will be Kevin Cerrito. Jason Munn's going to join us as well during the program. David Cobb will join Gabe at 5 o'clock. Make sure you're listening all day right here to 92.9 FM ESPN.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work Stuff.